Hi guys, it's me, Lindsay. You've probably heard me talk about my group mentorship, Marketing Made Simple for Small Business. We launched in the fall and nearly 50 women are currently inside learning simple but effective marketing skills to take their business to the next level. We just opened the doors this week to our spring cohort and you can join us. You can start building a simple marketing strategy designed to connect with your community, grow your brand and your bottom line without $1 million marketing budget or 1 million followers. Marketing Made Simple for Small Business is a group mentorship program for women-owned businesses. You'll work to create effective content, messaging, and a marketing process to connect with your community, build awareness, and ultimately drive sales. This program combines small group strategy sessions, one-on-one Q&A and accelerator calls, community support, and a ton of digital resources designed to give you the step-by-step instructions and guidance that you need for brand growth. Through Monday only, you'll be able to get into MMS at the lowest rate I'm going to offer for this cohort. Plus, you'll get a bonus from me, a customized Instagram audit with simple cosmetic changes that you can make to impact your engagement, reach, and growth. Until Monday, use the code FOUNDHER for 30% off, which equals about 2 months free off of an annual membership. Plus, when you become an annual member, you'll get a one-on-one accelerator call with me worth over $500. What I'm seeing taking place inside the community is absolutely amazing, and I hope to see you inside soon. If you have any questions, shoot me a DM or an email. I'm happy to answer them. Today's guest is honestly incredible. Stacey Eagle started her company, Boy Meets Girl, out of simply putting good back into the world. And she's never stopped. In addition to being a founder, she also has a podcast. She's the co-creator and co-host of the podcast, Hashtag Moms Got This, which was featured on Forbes as a women-created podcast everyone should be listening to right now, and in less than a year, ranked in the top 25 on iTunes. She just authored her first book, Embracing the Calm in the Chaos, How to Find Success in Business and Life Through Perseverance, Connection, and Collaboration, which is about her entrepreneurial journey and provides practical tips and takeaways for others to use in life and business. Now, Boy Meets Girl is a global impact brand known for its iconic double silhouette logo and purposeful, edgy, contemporary athleisure wear. Stacey and Boy Meets Girl seek to promote the message that confidence and courage are trends that never go out of style. Stacey has an exclusive fashion partnership with Paris's Colette, Bergdorf Goodman, Roots Canada, Saks Fifth Avenue, Bloomingdale's Target, NBA's Chicago Bulls, and Atlanta Hawks, just to name a few. She collaborates with musical artists, athletes, and activists making an impact, as well as organizations including the Young Survival Coalition, Bully Bust, Human Rights Watch, Glam for Good, Youth Over Guns, and many others. Today's conversation, honestly, only scratches the surface with Stacey. I'm so excited for you to meet her, and honestly, I can't wait to have her back. Come on in and meet Stacey Eagle. Dear Founder, I'm your host, Lindsay Pinchuk. At 30 years old, I founded my first company with just $500, building it to reach 3 million people and generate seven figures in revenue for 6 years straight, all before I sold it. A decade later, I exited with one goal, to support other women in business through their own entrepreneurship journeys. As an entrepreneur, you wear every hat. You burn the midnight oil, and most of all, you pour your heart and soul into everything you do. But there's no blueprint for success. Every week on Dear Founder, you'll get to sit in as I pick the brain of some of my closest female founder contacts. Save yourself time, money, and hassle listening to the lessons of those who have already done it. You'll also have the chance to hear about my own founder journey, how I built my first company, and now how I'm building my second, as I share solo episodes filled with actionable lessons and steps that you can apply to your business immediately. Make sure to subscribe now so that we can build our businesses together each and every week. Now, let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Dear Founder. I am so excited about today's guest. It is long overdue. She has so much in her arsenal. I don't know how we're going to get through it all in 30 to 35 minutes, but we will do our best. Stacey Eagle is here. She is the founder and chief creative officer of Boy Meets Girl, and I am just so excited to have you here. So thank you so much, Stacey, for your time and for being here.
Thank you. And I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me. And I know this will be like part one, part two, part three.
I mean, it's for sure going to have to be part one because you have so much going on. I don't even know how we can cover it all. But I want to start with the brand. I want to start with Boy Meets Girl, what it is, how you started it, you know, in as briefly as you can, because I want to really get to the meat and potatoes of everything that you're doing. But yeah. I want everyone to understand what it is that you do.
Okay, great. So I'm from Chicago, and I founded Boy Meets Girl, a global mission-led brand, in 2001 in New York City. So it's Boy Meets Girl in New York, we call it. Well, I like to say Boy Meets Girl in New York, but with the Chicago heart. And the brand has always been an impact brand. And what does that mean is we have been sharing voices, bringing people together, working with nonprofits globally to elevate those stories and give insight into what is happening globally for our consumer who might not know about it. And why, how did this happen? I started in 2001. I was a designer from the womb, designed all my friends' clothes growing up in Chicago, went to University of Wisconsin, triple majored in design, business, retailing, made my shirts and sold them in stores and off my friends' backs in college, and came to New York and worked for Izod, Ali Tahari. And then 2001, I called my parents and said, I'm leaving my 401k job. I'm going to start my own business. I've got a freelance job happening to support myself to pay my rent. And I'm doing this. And I got accepted into this show called the Workshop Trade Show, which was 60 designers. It was me, Peter Som, Rebecca Minkoff, Gary Graham, Liz Collins, all these greats, and in the Chelsea market. And this was supposed to happen the week of 9/11. And so as a young 24-year-old, I believe I was, faced with a terrorist attack in New York City, friends who had family or friends they had lost, and just witnessing this as a young, you know, woman, a young girl, was really this, you know, where we are today of just sadness. And starting a business in the midst of this was like, how the hell is that going to happen? Because in the beginning, we are all that week, you know, obviously the show's postponed, and then everybody's really wanting myself to be on the ground floor and help. And that's all I wanted to do. I come from no family in the fashion business. I come from a lot of people, physician assistants, doctors, first responders, and no one who knew fashion. So for me to be in fashion, you know, was very like, I didn't even think about it at that moment. Then I decided that I would go through with that trade show that happened a month later. And if I did go through with it, when I decided I would, that whatever I was creating at the time, which was my first designs, would be donated to the American Red Cross and victims of 9/11 and their families. And that would be the only way that I could like continue or even start. So as we know, we lost so many people. And as we know, businesses went out of business. And for some reason, I went into business. And that first trade show that ended up being with those 60 designers and showcasing that collection was one of the busiest trade shows I've ever had in my career. And I had a lot of fashion within that collection that was being designed for 4th of July that had Americana vibes. And so oddly enough, that was on trend. And so there I was, my mom was at the booth with me, an FIT intern who became an employee, and Bergdorf Goodman walks in. I was at the bathroom. My mother is freaking out because she lived in Staten Island and in the East Side before she moved to Chicago with my dad and loved Bergdorf Goodman and was like freaking out the Bergdorf Goodman team was there. And meanwhile, I'm like a thrifter, had never really gone to Bergdorf Goodman and couldn't afford Bergdorf Goodman. So when she was like, it's Bergdorf Goodman, I was like, okay, whatever, sure, you know. And then I laid out my clothes and my Boy Meets Girl Street, you know, aesthetic and my flowy hippie tops and my cinch shirts with the ribbon. And they bought the whole line. And that whole line was donated to American Red Cross and victims of 9/11 and their family. And all of a sudden, I was in business.
So you started business. It wasn't an accidental business, but you started business out right away to make an impact. Like that was the catalyst behind your business. That was the foundation that you laid, which yes. I think is, you know, we always hear talk about like laying this foundation and staying true to your mission. And that's obviously what you did and continue to do today.
Continue to do. Since that first show, I've continued to do that with primarily every collection that we do, from working with anti-bullying with the National School Climate Center since 2009, working with breast cancer awareness with the Young Survivable Coalition for Breast Cancer, Immigrants Are Us with the Human Rights Watch, raising awareness with the Trevor Project, Center in Halstead in Chicago with the Chicago Bulls, you know, just like endless. I didn't realize at the time what I would become as a voice in this mission and this give back realm. You know, you see brands today start to give back, which is awesome and amazing. And then you see people, you know, in COVID start to figure it out and want to do things. It's been just who I have been. And it's been the ethos of what I do. And so the many nonprofits, many brands, many companies come to me to elevate their companies to share a mission. And it's a beautiful thing to be part of that.
And so now is it safe to say you would classify your whole collection as athleisure and it's athleisure with a mission?
Athleisure with a mission. People call me streetwear as well. So streetwear, athleisure, whatever day it is. You know, when I'm in Paris at Colette opening a line next to streetwear brands, they call me a streetwear brand.
So walk us through how it works. Like how do you pick the mission, or how does the mission pick you? Because you can't obviously, I'm sure you are the type of person you want to help everyone. I know that. I can tell that just by, you know, the short conversations we've had and the short interactions we've had on Instagram over, you know, the last year or so. But how does that transpire in your business? Because, you know, there has to be a line drawn somewhere, right? Like where is that line?
So in the beginning, it really was important for me for myself and the brand to pick what was speaking to the youth. So, you know, youth culture is really who we touch, and it's a very big trend these days, but that was always who we were talking to. And what does that mean is like sharing these missions to a younger generation so that they can learn earlier and discuss these things. And so for me, my two pinpoints in the very beginning of the brand was really discussing anti-bullying, which was social media and the digital platforms. And you know, there was forums back then, and then YouTube, and then Instagram, and then a Facebook fan page, but really seeing the rise of bullying in the youth. And then Young Survivable Coalition for Breast Cancer was seeing the active rise of breast cancer in women under 30. And so really working with these organizations and sharing those missions through the brand. And then over time, like you said, so many people started to come to me to want to work with their organizations. And we wanted to always keep what we did true to what we were standing for. And so for me, anti-bullying spans out to anti-hate, you know, anti-racism, anti-Semitism, you know, F-silence, you know, all the, we talk about stopping hate continuously. And that really formed into Immigrants Are Us, with the Human Rights Watch came to me to do this big campaign. And within that campaign was talking about that we're all immigrants. We all come from a line of family who have come from somewhere. And on the back of that shirt was a drawing by Molly Crabapple that had, you know, diversity of everybody who comes to New York City. And it was a beautiful sketch of that. And then, you know, there's just, I wanted to talk about, you know, pride and sharing not to be hateful there. And so there's different organizations, Florida Equality, Trevor Project, Center of Halstead. So when the Atlanta Hawks and the Chicago Bulls came to me to partner with them, one of the first brands to cross promote in our branding and to bring mission to the organization. They came to me to do that with the organizations I had been working with. So that was with the National Center for Social Emotional Education and Anti-Bullying and for the Bully Bus program. And then with Chicago Bulls, we worked with the Center of Halstead to educate people locally. So really every mission that I've done or anyone we align to or any artist we align to or any musician we align to, it really is sharing the mission with us and wants to share their stories of how they can help others. And, you know, and through that, that's led in also like sustainability with clothing. Like I've always really worked hard to educate my buyers on using certain fabrications, since like Urban Outfitters deal in 2009 with, we used Hensel, we used organic, we used, you know, down to the hang tags being recycled paper. So, you know, that was that important to them then? Probably not. Is it important today? More so, but like really being an advocate for that. So it's been like what one I care about, and two, what is so important to educate our consumer on. And so when you know, people came to me over COVID, I have had a collaboration with a designer out of Brooklyn, for what happened in Beirut. And that was definitely like, I don't think a lot of our consumers knowing what's going on there. But I was like, this is a great time to bring this to our consumer. We donated about, I think, $2,000 or $3,000 to Impact Lebanon. And the shirt had in Arabic, you know, Beirut, 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 love, love, love. And it was a beautiful illustration by an amazing artist, Annabelle Dow. And so, you know, that's something that was newer for me to dive into, but it was aligned to everything we had been doing.
Okay. So I want to kind of paint a picture like of how much you have grown as a brand before I kind of, I want to get into the advocacy piece of it as well in your voice, but you talked about at the start of this, how you started by getting into Bergdorf and they bought the whole collection. Like, can you explain the growth of the brand and where are you now? And can you just kind of paint a picture for how big this brand is now?
Yes. So, from 2001 to 2015, the brand had been a wholesale brand, which is selling direct to a store. We did about 6 trade shows a year for 10 years, in Los Angeles, New York, Atlanta, Vegas, Dallas, you know, and that is just plopping down, you're selling your product at my first trade show, showing the line, selling to stores across the country and retailers. And when Bergdorf's happen, that's like a very big store in New York. And what everybody sort of looks as a, if you're in Bergdorf's, you know, people want you. So what happened from there, a lot of press came and everybody wanted my business, like in their stores. So from Bloomingdale's, Saks, Lord and Taylor at the time, I don't even know. Yeah, Lord and Taylor's around. You know, like all these department stores, Nordstrom's. And again, you know, I was the beginning of growing something. And I talk about that when we'll get to my book, but like, you know, where I was to today was like finding the factories, finding the factor, how am I going to find finance for the company, hiring, firing, finding location to like have an office that was enough that, you know, that I could afford it and, you know, be in the garment center. So all these pieces of building something from the ground up. And the main thing that was happening as I was building is Boy Meets Girl is, you know, a boy and girl logo silhouette. And I also own Girl Meets Girl and Boy Meets Boy, but I was growing the asset, which is the IP, and spending a lot of money on the protection of that IP. And what does that mean in, if you have a logo, you know, is protecting in class 25, which is t-shirts and clothing and apparel. And then class 3 is perfume. And then you get the global rights, which is the European protocol, and getting in for all different countries because, you know, lots of people like to copy. And so I was growing the asset and what I ultimately wanted to do in partner D, because I have partner A, B, C, and D, who's Munir. Munir is my partner, but I talk about that in the book because it wasn't series A, B, and C. And so partner D and I, Munir and I, always believed that the asset that I was growing, we would license eventually. And partner D always believed that we would license the brand eventually globally. And what that means is, so when I'm selling to the stores, I'm producing the goods, I'm shipping the goods, I have the warehouse, I have the factories, or I, you know, subcontract them out and we ship it. We take all the responsibility on ourselves, the finances, and we ship the goods, right? That's wholesale. And then now we have direct to consumer, where we are selling online. That's also producing the goods and shipping the goods, right? And then licensing is where you are giving someone the rights to your brand. They are producing the goods. They have a team to design and you do approvals, and you get paid a royalty. You get sometimes an upfront minimum guarantee. And some of the greats license, right? So if I look at like my past study of history of brands, Ralph Lauren in the very beginning was licensing every category. Halston was licensing every category. Donna Karan was licensing. And all the partners that I had along the way also had licensed big brands as well. And so I was seeing that around me and saying, I've been growing this brand asset, and everybody's wearing this through the press and the New York Fashion Week shows we did and the collaborations we did. And so we knew that there'd be a time where I could license it, like a Hello Kitty, like a Care Bears, like Strawberry Shortcake, who I've just collaborated with. So where I'm at right now is, since 2015, when I partnered with my partner Munir, we came together and I did an underground New York Fashion Week show where I showed, you know, this 14 years of what the brand was. And we never said where we were, but just to give you the depth of what it was that we had subway dancers performing above ground. They were a nonprofit we were donating to. I had collaborated with Jeff Staple on some shirts that had his pigeon in it. I had Justine Skye performing. She was a Brooklyn artist. I had an artist with Phil Jackson. That is the Chicago Bulls. Sorry. Got my Chicago Bulls. Randy Jackson. Randy Jackson had an artist from Singapore. And I had another artist who was, oh no, it was that. It was the dancers, the Justine Skye, and the artist from Singapore. And so it showed international, it showed nonprofit work, it showed dance and creative and musicians that I've always been working with into one room to show who we were. And that night, and I just really joined forces in those few months with Munir. And that night, Colette in Paris reached out to me. So I had some international success in the beginning, but I wasn't shipping tons. I had like done Harvey Nichols in Dubai, but again, wholesale. But Sarah from Colette, who's a creative vision, reaches out into our sales inbox and is like, I'd love to carry the line at Colette. And it was forwarded to me by one of my employees. And I'm like, is that Colette? Like, it's like Bergdorf's, right? And I forwarded to Munir and I was like, I think this is Colette. He's like, you got to respond. And I was like, okay. So I was like, is this Colette? And she's like, yes, this is Colette. And I was like, okay. So what happened with that was, just like I talked about Bergdorf Goodman putting me on the map, I then went out to Paris to launch this line with Colette. And it was like this international exposure that opened me up for really prime, like, international licensing and licensing in general, which is really interesting that this one store, just like Bergdorf's, could give that exposure to. And what happened was, unfortunately, I don't know why this happens, but at that launch was the night, that night after my launch was the night of the 3 attacks in Paris. And what's so crazy is, like, I was underground and didn't know what was going on, so people couldn't find me for like hours. But here I was again in like this attack, this terrorist attack, like 14 years later, launching my brand in this establishment. And Sarah and I formed this really beautiful friendship and like making sure we were all okay. And again, I continued to like raise awareness what was happening and make, you know, continuing the collections that we're giving back. And it just was like this exposure that again showcased who we were as a brand in the midst of fucking chaos and insanity.
Well, and I mean, obviously that's no one ever plans for that, right?
But no.
You know, of course not. But I think like you giving back and you using and you moving forward to educate and to continue to support does speak to the foundation of your brand. And you really haven't deviated from that ever. I mean, you look at every single thing that you've ever done and you harness what's going on in the world around you to fight back against indecencies around the world. And I think that that's like, it's really commendable because it's a hard spot to be in, right? Like,
oh, it's a hard spot. I mean, I, you know, through building the brand, I had a lot of people say, why are you doing that? Why are you working with that person? Why are you shooting them in a campaign? Why are you showing sizes? Why are you showing, you know, gender? Why, like, you know, you go through the history of Boy Meets Girl and you see like from day one, we were doing what everyone's like preaching doing now, which is great. I'm glad they're all doing it. But like, it was just normal for us to be doing this.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hivecast, an amazing agency providing high-quality podcast production made simple and affordable. I hit the jackpot when I came across Hivecast. As I pieced together services from contractors all over the web initially to help me with my podcast, Hivecast was everything that I needed all in one place. For just $500 per month, they not only produce and edit 4 episodes, but they also create the marketing assets. Emma, my account manager, is amazing, making sure that I'm on task and that we can schedule episodes regularly and by my deadlines. Honestly, the time saved working with Hivecast is worth at least triple what I'm paying. Their sister company, Fireside, offers other marketing services for small businesses, including social media management, Facebook and Instagram ads, search engine marketing, and so much more. Again, all at a rate palatable by a small business owner. The best part, there's no contract. You can purchase their services as needed on a monthly basis. Use the code FOUNDHER and save 50% off your first month of services. Give them a try. The decision to outsource this part of my business has surely saved me a ton in the long run, and it was the best decision I've made for my business.
Well, so one of the things that and I know there's like so much we can talk about. You have a podcast and you have so many things going on, but you also have a book, which I think is amazing that you are an author, embracing the calm and the chaos. And, you know, a big kind of the catalyst to me asking this question is like, you have become a voice for advocacy. I mean, you are an activist and like, you know, I don't think it's an accident activist. Like you, I mean, maybe a little in the beginning, you didn't really necessarily plan for your brand to be, you know, launched in conjunction with the terrorist attacks and it was, but obviously this speaks to who you are as a person. You are a caring soul and you want the best for everyone. And that is evident in the last hour you and I have been on this conversation, but you know, all of this experience has lended itself to you being able to have that voice to write this book.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, cause you can't write a book without a story and you have an incredible story.
Yeah. I think, you know, someone asked me the other day, you know, the process of, you know, writing the book or selling the book or, you know, everything. And, for me, it was so important for me to share the build and help future entrepreneurs and people who are in the midst of business or people are changing jobs. It wasn't just like a young entrepreneur. It's about really every entrepreneur in any stage. And people who are what they call, I just learned on a panel the other day with a girl from a jewelry line. It's called an intrapreneur. Someone who's inside the organization, but is like, you know, believes in the brand so much like that, that's also for them. So for me, it was the timing was like, okay, now is my time to give back and share this. And the process was, and this is not easy for authors, and I was in a very special place, that it was like from concept to sell was like the shortest in my career of 20 years. Like, find an agent, have a ghostwriter, put it together, like organize it, go out to sell and sell it. You know, like, and no, and that doesn't happen as an author or anybody. It doesn't happen as.
So that was your process as an author.
My process as an author in selling the book was a much shorter journey than like a business.
A clothing, your apparel.
Right. I mean, yes, my first trade show was Bergdorf Goodman, but so that was a nice process, but the process of a transaction doesn't usually go so smoothly. Right. And, but I've been writing in my journals for 20 years. I've been speaking to students. I created Boy Meets Girl University to give back and share and help students who want to be in fashion from all walks of life. And, you know, work with the Lower East Side Girls Club and have them part of a New York Fashion Week to shadow everybody who is on that show and really learn about what it entails to run a show. And so for me, this was a natural piece to what I wanted to do to give back.
So what can people expect when they read the book?
They can expect tons of vulnerability, because I don't think I'd shared a lot of, I definitely had never shared a lot of my stories. But also through adversity, how you can keep moving and how you can persevere and how connections and collaborations can really help you on your journey. And that as an entrepreneur, an entrepreneur, whatever, you know, process you are on that journey, sometimes is very lonely and super hard. And that there is a way to get past it with many stories that I share. And also I share stories of, I have 33 people in my book. I have 16 interviews in the back of the book with people who have either patted me on the back on my journey, who have worked with me, had been a best friend, who had the like same kind of roadmap as me, but in a different, like, you know, setting. He's an actor. I'm not, you know, and what we did to get to where we are, and that you can be, you know, in one store and then you can be in a million stores. And the journey is not always overnight. I have a quote in my book that is a joke, and it's about, you want me to tell you? So, there's a man, he lives on the beach. He has the same routine every day, picks up his coffee, goes on a walk. One day he's going to walk on the beach. He's in a really, really bad mood. And there's something nagging at his leg. And he's like, oh, this really hurts. This really hurts. And he looks down and he sees that it's like the snail. And he takes the snail and he's like, oh, and he throws it far, far away. And about 10 years later, he gets his coffee, opens the door to get his newspaper. He looks down and he sees the snail, and the snail says, hey man, what'd you do that for?
Love it.
So the journey, you know, that's 10 years later. So what I say to anyone who's building or doing or in the process of leaving and changing and doing, and or as a senior exec at a company who wants to get to the next level, like, that nothing happens overnight, and that there's a process, and there are things you have to learn, and there's highs and lows, and there's firing, and there's fights, and there's, you know, anger, and there's happiness, and there's, you know, accomplishments, but it's just, you know, it's not black and white.
Anyone who has been a Dear Found Her listener or who knows me from Instagram or who has been around for a while can obviously know and see why I adore you so much, because you speak my language. I mean, really and truly, like, everything that you just said is like, I say all the time, like, it doesn't happen overnight. It takes a process. You know, it's not a race. It's a marathon. You know, it's like, it really is a long game in order to be successful as an entrepreneur. And then also what you said, I love what you said, is that like, it is so lonely and it is so hard, and it does take the connections and the community both around you and within you in order to do this. You cannot do this without those things. And so, you know, yeah. I think to have this book as a resource for any entrepreneur, you know, I'm so happy to have you here talking about it. And I hope everyone goes out and buys it, because these are the things that like we all need to know as we're building businesses. And the fact that you have shared your experience that has been decades. I mean, you think back to 2001. I mean, that was a long time ago.
That was like, I'm like an OG vintage. Like, you know, I'm really hot on TikTok.
But that's amazing. Like, it's amazing, right? You know? Right.
It's crazy. Like, I'm like, oh my God, they like found Gilmore Girls from like Lorelai's wearing it on one of the episodes and there was no social media, right? So it's like viral on there. Like Nina Dobrev was with a group of the cast of Vampire Diaries and Boy Meets Girl and like, and was in a mugshot, you know? And it's like, oh my God, I'm like, my 16-year-old niece is like, oh my God, you, Nina Dobrev is wearing your shirt. You know, it's like amazing, right? I have a new life.
And like at the time, like it was not like as big of a deal as it is now. I mean, it was a big deal, but it was probably like on the, you know, what's the page in Us magazine where you're like what they're wearing or like, I don't even remember what it is. Yes. Like that's what it was, you know? I mean, it was like to be in that like when, you know, from 2001 to 2010, 2011, that was where you wanted to be, was like an In Touch and Us and whatever. Yes, and like, but it's like, now it's like you're having the second wind and it's like a resurrection of all of your press because it really is amazing.
I'm actually going to Germany. I've never been to Germany next week. I'm going to Barcelona, Germany and Naples, Italy. And I said to my team, I have a licensing team in Barcelona. And I said, use this picture because this is Lorelai is very hot in Germany and we get tons of orders on our website from Germany. And I was like, oh my God, it's
the truth.
It's amazing. So yes, you know, it's sometimes I look and I'm like, you know, see people doing things on TikTok that I never got to do because I was building in Union City and like at the factories and coming on the bus at like midnight, coming back, shipping packages, like doing all these things without Shopify, no scanner, like the UPS man, like, you know, and if I had a camera and like could show what I was doing, it would be like viral now, you know,
why you have this book because you can share those stories. And it's like, and that's what I just said to you is like, you can't write a book without the stories and you have the stories, a lot of stories and a lot of amazing stories that weren't preserved on social media. And I think that that's so important that you are sharing that knowledge and sharing that wisdom. And I feel, you know, like you're going to have to come back because we really have just scratched the surface. Like we really have just scratched the surface. So the homework I'm going to give everyone is to go out and buy Stacey's book, Embracing the Calm and the Chaos, because I know we all can definitely gain from it. And before I let you go, I do want to ask you the same thing that I ask everyone upon wrapping up. And that is this is going to be good coming from you. What are three actionable tips that you would give to an entrepreneur just starting out?
Never compare yourself to others. Always believe in what you set out to do. And customer service is king.
Stacey Eagle, founder and chief creative officer of Boy Meets Girl. Again, you have to come back. This is not the end of this conversation.
Authors Against Anti-Semitism. I forgot to talk about that.
Well, but you're going to have to come back. Or we're going to talk about it on an Instagram live when we promote this episode.
That's right. That'll be awesome. Yes.
But I'm so proud of you. And I am so happy to know you. And I'm so happy that we're connected. And like, seriously, I feel like I've been hearing about you for years. And I'm just so glad that we're in each other's orbits now. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And I can't wait to meet you in Chicago or New York.
Either one. I'm sure you'd agree with me that Stacey is simply incredible. And in case you missed it in our earlier episodes this season, we're going to be closing out each episode of season 3 with our number one takeaway from the day's conversation. My takeaway from Stacey today is to go with your gut and follow your heart. She didn't originally plan to create a mission-driven business, but when it happened, she saw her impact and she kept going. When you're in business for the right reasons, the success and the money will follow. Thanks so much, Stacey, for being here today. We've been getting so much love for season 3, and you have all been so gracious with your time, leaving us some amazing, amazing reviews. Gal BM recently shared, "I'm so glad I found Lindsay and absolutely love, love, love her podcast. I've gotten so many gems of tips, and a bonus is that she brings such fantastic energy to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Gail BM, for that glowing review. If you liked today's conversation, I would love it if you also left a 5-star rating and a review so that others can find this conversation. All you have to do is go to ratethispodcast.com/dearfoundher or click the link in the show notes to leave a review wherever it is that you podcast. If you know someone who we should meet, please send them our Meet a Founder link that is in the show notes. We'll introduce them to our community on our social media and our website later this year. But for now, I want to thank you for listening and thank you for being here. Have a great rest of the week, and we will see you on Tuesday.